music in air. Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Oh, yes, I really do believe there's a heaven somewhere. All in my room, music everywhere. All in my room, there is music everywhere. All in my room, music everywhere. Well, I really do believe there is a heaven somewhere. Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head, music in the air. Whoa, oh yeah, I really do believe there is a heaven somewhere. Heaven somewhere.
This is Melissa, and today is the 10th of August, 2025. In this Redux that I'm posting, Alan, it's a blurb, and he chose three pieces of music that he included to illustrate the talk, and so I thought my adding one more at the beginning was okay, and I'll post a link and some information on where you can find out about that, as well as the other songs that Alan features throughout this. So the talk I chose is from December 21, 2006, entitled Simians, Servitude to Slavery. And I just wanted to mention before I get going on anything else that I appreciate your support. It is essential, and it is how I manage to keep going. And I usually say that, and I thought about it this afternoon, and I thought, well, maybe it doesn't matter to you if I keep going or if I can pay my property taxes or buy groceries or whatever. So let me try to find the thing that will matter to you. And so I just wanted to point out what to me is the obvious, which is Alan's work, his books, Cutting Through, Volumes 1 through 3, and Waiting for the Miracle, and all of his talks in audio form. This is essential for anyone's library. It's timeless work. You can pick up his books, and it doesn't matter how many times you've read them. I promise you, you will have food for thought. And I think what I've done with the flash drive project, and I've had feedbacks confirming my thoughts, that it's beautiful. They're beautifully packaged, and it's all of Alan's talks together on 7 flash drives, plus his Christmas guitar music, and it's just good. It's a good value for you, and you don't even have to think about me and my needs. But I was remembering how Alan used to do it. He would tell you all of the ways that you could support. So really quickly, I'll just say that if you are in the U.S. and you want to send a personal check, you can send it to CTTM, Post Office Box 815, Keene, that's K-E-E-N-E, Texas, 76059, USA. And there are bank checks. If you're out of the country, you can have a check drawn directly from your bank. There's an international money order option. And, cash seems to make it if you want to do it that way. There is also on the front page of the website, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, you will find a link right there near the top that is Stripe. And Stripe allows you to subscribe, $5 a month, $15 a month, whatever you want to do. But it also allows you to make a one-time payment to order books or discs or flash drives. And that is on the front page of the website. So with that out of the way, I do appreciate it. Thank you very much. I there was something as I was finishing up posting last week. I thought, oh shoot, I didn't stress that one paragraph. You know, it's always I always think it's got to be one more thing that I tell you. Oh, you must be sure to. So this is from last week's Redux, which was a talk that Alan did after having a bit of a hiatus. February 23, 2014, reports of my death have been greatly exaggerated. He said, remember too that because we are studied minutely and the crowd and the masses are studied minutely, you can't do anything in this without understanding behaviorism and crowd dynamics and individual dynamics and group dynamics. Then, like Cass Sunstein said, you know, even what seems to be the opposition, you can disarm. And actually, you can use opposition, often willingly and sometimes unwillingly, by giving them certain information, encouraging them, apart from putting plants in amongst them, also encouraging them to put out high power fear mode information, rapid, knowing that the average person can only handle maybe one or two crises at the same time simultaneously. Any more than that, they break down, they become neurotic and break down. So information overload, especially in diverse topics, especially topics where you have no control whatsoever, is weaponized. It's weaponized information. And I just felt that that was important to stress, because what I have been talking about is information overload. And so I'm not just bringing something to you, but I also do things that I think might be of benefit to me. So if I listen to a talk of Alan's, it might be because it's not necessarily just because, oh, there's something in the news or something, you know, time sensitive. It's there are things that I need to hear for whatever reason. And I have needed to hear about and think about information overload and how we receive the information that we take in. But also something on my mind is that it seems to me that now is the time to, not to be too Masonic about it, but now is the time that we need to be, each and every one of us, concerning ourselves a bit with output. And what does that mean? What do you give back? What do you put out? Because I fear that we are stuffed full of information, and I wonder how much of it is useful. And this comes up in the Telegram book club chat, where people are getting their wings, as one way of putting it, getting comfortable opening their mouth and sharing. And one person commented today in our chat that the more he did it, the more comfortable it became. And I have noticed that the more that I try to explain something to people, the more I learn myself what it is that I'm attempting to explain. Because we learn by teaching. And with input, with the things that come into our head. Now, there's one way of doing it, and Alan cautioned about this. You would take in something from a Patriot show where it's fear, 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 so that they can sell you gold and silver. And then you run off, and I've done this, guilty. I am guilty. Oh, did you know 9/11 was an inside job? You know, so it's this kind of panic thing that you get. Well, that's not actually teaching people anything. It's parroting some bad, freaky, dramatic news, and usually doing it at a kind of a manic pace, because it has been presented to you as earth-shattering and super very terribly important. So we do, after a while, tend to kind of settle in and say, oh, okay, All right, I see. It's, you know, the sky may not be falling literally right now. Thinking about music and listening to different music this week, I was remembering a good group. It doesn't really matter who they were or how I found them, but they were part of what they were doing, and this was many years ago. It was a vocal technique that I had never heard, to my knowledge, and I was unfamiliar with it, and it sent me researching and listening to different people that were doing this. But the group was doing something called polyphonic overtone singing, or overtone singing, which you'll sometimes hear as harmonic singing. And that's not different people harmonizing, but it's actually a vocalist, a singer harmonizing with themselves. So polyphonic overtone singing, and it's not exactly the same thing, but it is related to something called throat singing. And you'll hear it associated with things like Tibetan or Mongolian chanting. It's very interesting. So if you feel like checking it out, you can do that. But the reason I bring it up is because I was thinking about Alan and the way that he talked to us. And on every episode, every talk that he brought us, he's telling us some things, and some things might seem repetitive, whether it's Club of Rome or Bertrand Russell or Carol Quigley. And, you know, so you'll hear these things over and over he'll say, and you'll say, oh, yeah, I know all about that. But Alan talked in polyphonic overtone singing style. I just came up with that this week, but I think that's what he was doing. I think that he could actually speak in a way so that you could hear him say a thing. But within that thing, there might be one or two other layers or levels of meaning there if you were quiet enough to hear it. And that amazes me. That was Alan, though. Where there's always something, if you take your time and listen to it carefully, and here is the key. If you don't get too caught up in the news of the day technique or the historical names and dates, and then this group, this roundtable group did that, but just, you know, kind of get into that flow, and then you'll hear, oh yes, I'm hearing two notes at once. Isn't that interesting? Two sounds at the same time. And I hear that in this talk as well. And I will say something, and longtime listeners have given me similar comments over the years, that once Alan started on Republic Broadcast Network, which was broadcasting network in 2007, and he was doing three nights a week and then five nights a week, and he got into more of a news format. So it was news of the day, but within that you still had the overtone, so he could still get deep and amazing and thought-provoking things that could put your mind off in many deep different directions. But this is an earlier blurb, earlier from that time. And so you notice that he's not really talking about that kind of news of the day. So, I mean, news of the day, what's going on? I mean, I think we've, you know, heard that, you know, Netanyahu says that Israel's going to take over Gaza. That's it. It's going to be under their management and they've got to run it. And I was listening to some people talking, some journalists talking today, and they said, what's left to take over? I mean, they've bombed most of it to rubble. Most of the people are displaced. Many of them are dead. So what's left to take over? And I could rattle off other news stories. I mean, this is definitely a hard one to look at. It's genocide. I think that's the word that we have to use. But I return again to what Alan said there about information overload, especially when it's diverse topics. Well, what do we get when it's the news? Wherever you take it, it doesn't need to be a major network. You can get your news on YouTube or Substack or Rumble, or you can get it from Fox News, you can get it from the BBC, but you are going to be getting many topics. And they will be, as Alan said, especially topics where you have no control whatsoever. And that, he said, is weaponized. It's weaponized information. And further, going back two or three, 4 weeks ago, whenever I ran another talk of his, and in which he called news the most perfected form of fiction. What is fiction? Fiction is a form of entertainment. So if you like horror as a form of entertainment, then you can embed yourself in the news coverage of Gaza and Israel and Hamas. And if you like comedy, you can just follow everything that Donald Trump says. If you like drama, there's porous borders and illegal immigration. These are very dramatic stories. And it's so hard to know what you always have to consider the source. You know, it's so hard to know if your coverage is slanted, and your ego will tell you that you know because of, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. I can tell you that. I can't verify. And this is one thing that I spent a fair amount of time doing for and with Alan, was attempting to vet and verify. Now, at the end of the day, we know that you can't ever know someone's intentions or their heart or where they're coming from. But to the best of your ability, you can try to suss out if it's fake news. And I mean really fake news. And that happened. That happened to Alan, and it happened to me, where you get burned by a story that, you know, turns out to be just made up, you know, completely made up. So it is hard to vet. It's hard to know. I mean, for instance, the coverage, it was a two-hour podcast that I was watching from The Gray Zone, and that's Max Blumenthal and Aaron Maté. I'm ambivalent to The Gray Zone, although I do find that from time to time, if I check in there, I'm getting some coverage that sometimes actually seems that it's not leaning too far left and it's not leaning too far right. But I happen to know, because I've looked into it before, that Max Blumenthal is the son of Sidney Blumenthal, who was also a journalist and was a key advisor to Bill Clinton, really tied in with the Clintons. So what we've got with journalism and the media and any story we get from anywhere, it's a quagmire. Maybe that is the swamp, you know. And listen carefully to this talk from Alan, because he will be touching on who is who out there and why are they giving you the slant that they're giving you. And he talked in particular, specifically, about what we call patriot or truther media, and how it's long been tied up in gold and silver, gold and silver, gold and silver. And we did a funny thing that amused us, at least, around the house, where if a certain show might be coming on shortwave, one or the other of us might go, gold and silver, you know, like a pirate's parrot. And that is, you know, that's what we get. It's a technique of selling you nonstop fear and hype and spin and excitement, so that ultimately they can sell you gold and silver, gold and silver. If you stop for a moment and say, well, what am I doing with gold and silver? Oh, hey, I just happened to scroll down to this place on the transcript here. And Alan said, it's interesting to see some of the emails which come in concerning the people's views. And one person wrote recently that he didn't quite agree with my take on money. And I think he was pushing the usual things. A novice learns about the gold and silver from the Patriot Movement and how it's lawful currency. And that's the stage this particular last person who emailed was stuck at. He doesn't realize that the same people who run the system today with paper money and IOUs and all the rest of it, regardless of the Bretton Woods Agreement and all the other agreements that went through, still they ran the gold standard too. They still do. They own the gold mines, in fact. And it made me think about GCN, which is now no longer. It closed last year. But that's Genesis Communications Network, and that was Ted Anderson who started that, and that's the network that Alex Jones' show was syndicated on. So that was GCN. Well, Ted Anderson started the network many years ago, so that he could promote his company, which was called Midas, as in the Midas touch, gold. So Midas Resources, and he was selling precious metals. And so he built a station with, you know, so-called truthers and patriots and so forth, simply so that he would be able to promote gold and silver, gold and silver. So it everything that you listen to, everyone that you follow, if you do enough digging, you will almost always, not always, there are some genuine voices out there, but they don't have much of an audience. They are going to be very hard to find because they're not authorized. It's as simple as that, because what we're allowed to have is controlled opposition, authorized voices. And I had a similar kind of exchange with a listener last week when I wrote something, and I mentioned specifically by name an interview that I had seen between Tucker Carlson and a German economist by the name of Richard Werner. And Richard Werner has developed his own theory of how money is created. And I also mentioned that he was, I think he may be the one who coined the term or the expression quantitative easing. But certainly he has promoted that policy. And I received a series of messages from someone who basically said that I was mistaken about Richard Werner, and that his work was actually groundbreaking, that he was going against the establishment, that he had paid a price for going against the establishment. And so he then gave me some different things, including a documentary that I could watch that was based on a book of his. The documentary and the book are called Princes of the Yen. And I really do like to do what I say I'm going to do. And so I will be investigating these things that this person sent me on Richard Werner. I said I would take a closer look. But the point that I made with him is I I take some shortcuts from Ellen. Yes, I give it my own thought, but I may not spend a lot of time researching something. If it strikes the right chord with me, then I'll say, okay, that's right. And with Alan, that shortcut that I got, or from Alan, was that money itself is a con, and therefore it doesn't matter what form it's in, or how it is studied, or what possible fixes could be proposed that would make it better, or would make it better for us. In the case of Richard Werner, I believe it was something called community banking. So it localizes the exchange. But I still, I'm with the shortcut, which is money is a con, and it is the root, not the love of it, but the root of evil. And that every atrocity that we see is allowed or funded by or perpetrated by and with money. But it, again, it's that thing about Alan and the overtone singing, or the polyphonic overtone. It's, he's giving us some things at different layers of sound, different levels of sound. And sometimes the most useful thing that we can do for our brain and the way that our minds function is to limit some of the sounds that come in to our heads, so that we can hear the things that matter more easily. I think I also just wanted to mention about the overload, the information overload, is the way in which things are put out that make it seem real and now and different. And there's a portmanteau called conspirituality. There is also one that hasn't, I guess it may not be authorized, or it may not have had the stamp of approval that says, yes, this is a real portmanteau, which is conspiratainment. But I do believe that conspiratainment is quite real, where things that used to be called conspiracy theories are blended in with more of the mainstream. I think you just have to look at the trajectory of someone like Tucker Carlson and the people that came off of Fox or around that, say, for instance, Candace Owens, and you see conspiratainment. But conspirituality was the overlap between conspiracy theories and spirituality, and typically of a New Age variety. And the word New Age can be a little bit misleading, because it sounds like something oh so disapproving of, you know, crystals or horoscopes or tarot cards or something, or yoga. And it's much subtler than that, because the New Age, in terms of the mindset that gives us our worldview, our cosmic view, our view of the heavens, is already, I believe, completely entrenched. But it doesn't even really matter if the conspirituality, if the spirituality being blended with the conspiracy theory is more mainstream, say, for instance, Christianity, because there you saw that perfect blending with QAnon and all of the stories that came out of that. And that was conspirituality and conspiratainment. A very, very clever psyop. And again, coming back to the news, Alan would tell us that it only takes about 25 newspapers, I think they determined that they had to be, or magazines, you know, that they had to be in control over. And those would be the tone setters. And then it would work its way down and out and everyone would pick up on it. And sometimes it's just, you know, kind of almost like osmosis. This is what the big papers and magazines are talking about. And so all the offshoots do it. And I believe that that is what we have in the world of the alternative or the so-called truther or patriot. You know, it doesn't really see, it used to be alt-right. I mean, it just doesn't have a name that seems to have stuck right now. But that world has, I think we're seeing a move away from some of the Christian conservative elements that were so much a part of that world for decades into some different things, like, oh, a newish one is the anarcho-capitalism. You know, and so you've got these people who describe themselves as anarchists, and, you know, we're going to have a community that gets together, and where we're going to have our own system of money for us. So the thing that Alan said, one of the things that he said here in this talk that was so important, he was talking about how the public never gets an input. And we, you know, he said, for donkey's years on shortwave. And he said, the public never gets input. Democracy has never existed on the exoteric level and never will exist on the exoteric level. However, for donkey's years on shortwave and other U.S. stations, there were authorized patriot stations going on about all this stuff decade after decade after decade, who were being funded by gold and silver and selling gold and silver without telling the people the rest of the story as to who owns the mines and who sets the price of gold. Well, just stop for a moment. And okay, so maybe it's not so much gold and silver. Maybe it's crypto, Bitcoin. You know, do we stop and say, who is doing this? Who is behind this? It's a gigantic machine. On the highest levels, it is about gigantic pirate land grabs. And then for us, we're given a completely different story. And we're going to come through this. We're going to win. We're going to survive this if we just get on the new money system that we're going to have control over. And so I think, I mean, I really did have a lot more that I wanted to say, but I've prattled on long enough, and I think I may leave the rest of what I had to say for another time. But I think the most important thing is the information overload is real. Alan mentions in this talk the land for debt swaps. Basically, it's theft. It's theft. It's UN and government-controlled theft of land and resources tied to debt. And earlier this week, I sent out I restacked, as they say, a couple of substacks. One was called Echoes of Colonialism, and the other was Colonialism 2.0. And he did it, this person, whoever they are, Escape Key, did an amazing, long, detailed, excellent discussion about the clauses that allow them, the UN with the Sustainable Development Goals and all of the other people who are grabbing land for their, you know, reasons that are decided at a higher level, are using a very clear system to tie metrics of performance. Yes, we did all of the things that we needed to do to be sustainable, to be green and so forth. And if they don't, if they miss a target, immediately they're going to get fined or their loan is withdrawn. And so this is very real, and I sent it out. But when I started to look more into it, I don't have a quibble with the writing or the facts or the information, but I realized I'm getting information overload. And frankly, I'm guilty of this too. In my writing, in my talking, and the things that I get into, it becomes very fascinating to me. I want to learn about it. I want to know about it. oh, that's so neat, that connection I find. Oh, that so-and-so is related to so-and-so, and they were involved in such-and-such way. And so I then bombard you with information. And I think that we really are at that pivotal time where output is more important than input. But more important than that is what is at stake is our humanity. And true humans aren't just stuffing themselves full of data 24/7. That's not how I want to live. It's not human. Machines get stuffed with data. So I'll leave you to have a good week, and I'll be back later on with something else, but hopefully it won't be information overload. It might be something that you find useful or helpful, and that is what I would like to bring you. Take care.
Hi, folks. This is Alan Watt. And it is the 21st of December, 2006. And how this year has flown in. And so much has happened, but things are speeding up now as we go into a new era. The 21st century was kicked off with a bang. And we know that many books have been published by those up in the know concerning the 21st century and where they would take us. And by God, have they taken us there so far, even starting with 2001, the real beginning of the 21st century. And in a sense, that's why Arthur C. Clarke's movie was put out called 2001 back in the 1960s, to be a celebration of that which was to come. And in the movie, they go through a space journey. They show their religion, of course, based on evolution through species. It's all at the beginning of the movie and in the book. Until you have humans who are traveling in space, who are now up against their next big challenge, which is artificial intelligence, where the computer HAL takes over and starts killing off the crew, and the one male who overcomes HAL becomes a god, because that's the mystery religion, all tied up in a story form. And they could have put the same story out at sea or on the earth somewhere, but they put it in space, but it's the same esoteric meaning behind it, where he who overcomes all, including the grand architect himself, becomes God. The 21st century also is to be a time of complete reorganization of a whole way of living, all that was in high Freemasonry must perish, be destroyed, torn down, demolished, to make way for that which is new, the new age. And just like in the olden times when they would build cathedrals next to existing churches, they would be dismantling the old churches, they built the new right next to it. A traditional method of the mystery religion. And they're really referring to not only the physical world, but also in the spiritual world, and in their religion based on a form of evolution and interbreeding, special breeding, specialized, selective breeding. Charles Darwin did not originate a theory of the origin of species. He simply reiterated what his father had already done and his grandfather before him in their publications, because it's a religion of the esoteric higher Freemasonry, not the little stuff at the bottom that people join in the Blue Lodge. The blue stands for the open sky. All that is seen for the profane of intelligence is blue, the blue sky. However, that the real work is done in the dark, and the light that shines within the darkness are the luminaries who guide our cultures, the planet, and the future. There's also the higher lodges too, coming out of there with their different colors of purple. That's royalty. The dawn is purple, the purple dawn. And then you have the red lodge, of course, which is revolutionary lodges, always have been. And he who changes the world and gives his life for the world streaks across the sky, gives brilliant white light, then turning gradually to red, shedding the blood, the life of the world, or for the world. And this is the standard mystery religion, which most religions, the exoteric, are based upon. We have been guided for thousands of years, and definitely from the inception of some definition of wealth. Most natural tribes don't even have terms for wealth or personal possessions even, because they live naturally. They didn't live in an acquiring economic system where the goods themselves have importance. And money is the key of all domination. It doesn't matter what it's called or what's used for money, as long as a few people at the top have the right to say what it is, how much it's worth, and how much you will be taxed back, because that's your labor going back in taxes. The upper crust then use those taxes to have standing armies and police forces and bureaucracies to dominate you. So money makes this world go around indeed. It's interesting to see some of the emails which come in concerning people's views. And one person wrote recently that he didn't quite agree with my take on money. And I think he was pushing the usual thing. A novice learns about the gold and silver from the Patriot Movement and how it's lawful currency. And that's the stage this particular last person who emailed was stuck at. He doesn't realize that the same people who run the system today with paper money and IOUs and all the rest of it, regardless of the Bretton Woods Agreement and all the other agreements they went through, still they ran the gold standard too. They still do. They own the gold mines, in fact. So to go back to the lawful money, you get the same bunch in charge, and it just wears out your pockets faster. There's quite a weight in that lawful money. And they again will tell you what it's worth, you see. People who still think that the government can take control of the corrupt money supply in the system by following the laws that were laid down really haven't got it at all. They haven't understood what's going on. Because the exoteric, even the constitution of any country is the exoteric. It's for the public consumption of how things are supposed to be. And never is. And never was. For those who want to know how the system works, go beyond Bretton Woods, go into the 1800s and see the big boys crash the gold standard 3 times in the late 1800s, raking millions and millions of dollars in the US alone by doing so, 3 depressions in the latter part of the 1800s. And they were brought on by 3 bankers who planned it that way. And it doesn't matter what you're using, as long as they're in charge of it, as long as they put up a debt system, floating a big casino called the debt system, this casino of stocks and bonds where people buy your debt and want a profit from the debt, guaranteed to them by governments if they buy this debt. It's a big casino which is totally rigged. And who owned all the gold mines in the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, 20th century, 21st century? It's the same people. Look who put Cecil Rhodes in Africa to take over the diamond and gold mines, to find them all and claim them and stake them. It's the same people. And these are the same people who now issue checks to governments to print money and then demand real wealth back in return. Money has always been a con from the inception of it, because it's not a real worth good. It's a substitute for everything else. You must believe in the substitute. In fact, you must believe that it's more important than food or anything else that you could barter. And once you believe that, you've had it. Whether it's porcupine quills, seashells, quartz stones, gold, silver, or tin, it doesn't matter, because you don't have a say in how much the value is. Remember, value is only an idea. The price of something is an idea. And we're brought up in this system never questioning all of these ideas. We think they're real and concrete somehow, as though it's natural. If a completely different society had been designed for the people would grow up into it thinking it was quite natural. You see, that has always been this way. The children growing up today and getting put into kindergarten today are being conditioned already for brain chips in their own lifetime, which they will look forward to, because the PR to sell the idea to them is going to promise them all the beautiful things in the world, all the fantastic powers and joys and experiences. And if we haven't learned that we've always been lied to by the elite, then we'll never learn anything at all. In the 1960s, the futurist think tanks were putting out massive propaganda, because at that time the income taxes started to really escalate as government began to duplicate and triplicate bureaucracies, tier upon tier upon tier of bureaucracies. So to tell the public why it was happening and to promise them a rosy future, you see, at the end of it all, they said that all this money was going to create a system where we'd very few people would have to work. It would be a privilege to have a job to serve the people. And they even had sketchings all done in newspapers about this massive publicity stunt by the big futurist think tanks employed by the elite. And they said we were walking around with Roman togas and just sort of floating all over the place, discussing philosophy and passing time, and how we'd have to find new ways to pass the time. We'd be so bored, you see. Well, that hasn't happened. If anything, yeah, the taxes all went up to work towards this system, but we didn't see the end result. We didn't see any income from it for the public. We see the system of totalitarianism being set up. We've seen massive police organizations being set up. We have seen children's aids become basically an army, another arm of government, a huge army, with all its rules, regulations, which they don't have to pass into law. They just write it themselves, and it becomes law. It's quite amazing to watch this totalitarian system using our money, our labor, really, because we wouldn't work for anything except the money that we've been taught to accept, to work for. It's amazing to watch it all come to pass. We buy our chains. We make and buy our chains ourselves. And all the time we're being told it's for our own good, or it's for a happy future, or it's for the children. And on it goes. With last night's talk, I mentioned the brain chip and where that really is meant to go, which is total control. There'll be no free thought, no individuality at all. In fact, you won't even be an individual sentient creature. You'll just be something which is programmed on a daily basis. A far cry from this Roman toga stuff, floating around discussing philosophy, as they told us, as they raked in all the cash and jacked up all the taxes back from the 60s onwards. But money is the key to everything. He who has the gold makes the rules. Now it's just the checkbook and the right to issue those checks. And we have never been told and never will be told why a couple of handfuls of these families have the right to decide for the rest of us what money is or what it's worth. We watch land being taken over across the planet that were first put into, the governments first put into national parks. If you notice, at the end of every year, the governments will announce how many hundreds of national parks they've created that year. Then all this gets given off to the big bankers or the United Nations for debt relief. It's a swap land for, you know, remember the old oil for foods is con game that we saw who raked in the money there at the top of the United Nations, who's still there, by the way, because they're pirates at the top. It was the same thing with land for debt swap. That's what's been happening for years now. Biospheres, UN biospheres. And the United Nations was brought into being without a single vote of any citizen of any country outside of the little high Masonic cliques that formed the governments of each country. The public were never asked for any input. The politicians never asked for the right to do so. It was just done. That's democracy for you, because democracy has never existed on the exoteric level and never will exist on the exoteric level. But for donkey's years, on shortwave and other US stations, there were authorized Patriot stations going on about all this stuff decade after decade after decade, and always being funded by gold and silver and selling gold and silver, without telling the people the rest of the story as to who owns the mines, who sets the price of gold. See, the Rothschilds always set the price of gold every morning. And because something is declared law for money, means nothing at all, because what is law? Law is an instant rule given out by a superior. There is no vote taken again by any citizen whether a law should be passed or not. And there's no input from any citizen as to how a system should be set up and run. It doesn't work that way. In ancient times in the Middle East, they counted their slaves. They had a head count. And we have words which come from that count. Many is one. Money is from that, they're the same root. Mon was man. Money. Because it's the output of labor that creates anything real in this world. Labor is the only thing which does it. Karl Marx did it right, because he was taught by the bankers themselves, who were the only ones who understood economics. With those who control money and who have gotten people to accept that money is a natural thing, which is most people on the planet today, wasn't always that way, comes another parallel idea of theirs. It's called progress. Now, progress can never be allowed to happen willy-nilly or by mayhem or chance. Power always looks towards the maintenance of itself down through time. So all big changes which come along are planned that way. The direction you grew up in and live through in your life, and your parents before you, and then your children after you, all of that's directed very carefully by those, in combination with those who have money, the powerful, the elite, the old families. They direct the direction of the world. And the major wars in the world are all planned that way. They're necessary to get a change in direction and to amalgamate countries and nations into blocks, which then become united into bigger blocks and empires, which then are united into a global society run by a few. And the few are the elite in every country, every nation. They're all part of the club. Anyone who refuses to join is simply bombed out of existence under some pretext or another. War is an extension of business. Every war is an economic war. And it also is a takeover, a business takeover, by force, but it's just business. And under all the guise of glory and patriotism and justice, all the superficial camouflage is meant to get the public on board, as pirates would have you say, a very common term today. All that's just meant to con you, and most people are conned very easily, because the elite have archives of knowledge going back many thousands of years. And when you want the public to go along with anything at all, any direction change, whatever, any moral change, whatever, is just a matter of looking up the right mathematical sequence, the formula. And if you introduce the formula as it's been introduced before, and if it worked before in society, as the ancients, including Plato, said, it can be done again, whenever they want to, down through time. Just formulas. And so they use tribal instincts in time of war to goad us into fighting their wars for them, their business takeovers, their projects, their well laid out plans. There were writers in the 1800s writing about the future wars to come, which were necessary to get a world empire underway. And they knew how who they'd have to take on. They also knew the countries which could be bought off and brought under the wing by simply paying off the established elite in those countries. But they also knew that there were other countries which couldn't be so easily bought off. And they have no hesitation about creating the circumstances for war. Sometimes they had to agree between the elite of two countries to have the war, because although they would be on board in either country, the populations wouldn't be. So the wars were really to convince the populations that change was necessary, to get them out of their old way of living into a new way, an amalgamated new way. We are run scientifically. Nothing is left to chance. Anything that was left to chance could run amok and have a roller coaster effect which couldn't be controlled. So every major event in the planet has to be run that way, organized and planned and carried out that way. Some authors have tried to warn us, a very few, and they were persecuted, the ones who tried to warn us. I've said many times that those who come out of the FBI or CIA or MI6 or whatever and just blithely go on TV and radio shows discussing everything or talking all wet, because you cannot do that. They've all signed an official secrets act, which generally continues for 30 years after they retire. And they know the consequences if they break the rules. And the best, well, apart from Kelly, who was killed in England, the best example we have is Peter Wright, who wrote Spycatcher, because Maggie Thatcher had him up in court, the High Court of London, the highest court in the land. And she seized the second book they put out, the A to Z of Spycatching. But in the first book, which did get out there, and he was charged for that too, he gave you all the clues you needed. He couldn't say that any more clearly without really being put up against a wall and shot with a blindfold on. He tells you he worked inside MI5 and worked with MI6. And during the 60s, when some major British agents defected to Russia, which no one has come out and told us why so far, I know why. But he clued in to who was doing it. And at the end of the night in MI5, two boxes were prepared. One went, these steel boxes with information on top intelligence, one went to royalty, to the Queen, and one went to the head of all British security. And the one main suspect who was the head of the British security at the end of Peter Wright's term in MI5, was the main suspect. And that was Victor Rothschild of the banking family. There's a book called The Fifth Man. Very interesting read. But Wright, in his book Spycatcher, tells you so much about the Rothschilds. And what Wright was cluing in on was there was another group above the Soviets and above MI5 running both sides. And that's when he dawned that the whole thing was a con game, and even those involved in the lower levels, and he classed MI5 as one of the lower levels, they had to believe it was real. The agents themselves, those in the Cold War, had to believe it was all real, just as the KGB agents in Russia had to believe it was real. It's amazing to see how we're all manipulated from a capstone. And when you're on one side of the pyramid, you don't see the other sides. You don't see them. Wars have to be real to those who fight them. So they have real blood, real disasters, real slaughter, which convinces those who survive that all the changes that come out of the wars, well, it's necessary. We can't have that again. Conflict. Progress, as it's defined, is the outcome of conflict. In the mystery religion, they use the seasons to describe the whole, the one. The 1 year consisted of seasons, which were opposites. So you had summer for heat and winter for cold. You had spring for birth and fall or autumn for the death, the dying. And yet out of all of the conflicts comes the next year and the next and next and next, an ongoing process of continued ongoing creation. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. If you understand the sciences of it and the Hegelian dialectic of it, and you've studied Nietzsche and others, you'll understand the religion a lot better and how it works. And then it makes sense to you how the dialectic process works and how the world is steered and guided down through time to a predetermined goal. It's fascinating to me to watch those who break through the religion and glimpse the otherness of all of this. And some of them have a hard time too, breaking away from religion, saying, well, my goodness, Revelations predicted the mark of the beast and how no one could buy or sell without the mark. How could that have been done? It's supernatural that that's how these revelations came. Really, when a system had been on the go already for thousands of years, an intense mystery religion, it was no big deal to have someone write down when Revelations was eventually put out there, and that's debatable when it was put out there, actually. I think the Vatican didn't add it in until about AD 500 or even later. And it was taken out after that and put back in again and updated. However, that's how you con whole peoples into, well, there's nothing you can do because, you see, Big Yahweh planned it that way. It's God's plan. It's very easy to plan a future when you understand you've already got a good part of the world under your thumb. When you control the money, because money creates this type of society you will live in, the totality of that society, it then runs all the power structures underneath you to control that society, and it controls everybody within that society. And you can hire standing armies, which you couldn't have before if there was no money. The boys would all go home when they were bored. And with the standing armies, you can conquer other countries and rob them too, and force them to use the same moneyed system. And as I say, it doesn't matter what the money happens to be. Power dictates what it is going to be. We fail to realize how artificial our system is. It's completely artificial. We don't even know what normal was anymore. It's so far removed from it. We have no records of normalcy. We can watch so-called primitive tribes, those that still survive in little isolated places in Borneo or the Amazon, who are totally self-sufficient and who don't need anybody's system to help them out. The world's could fall apart tomorrow as far as the financial system goes, and they would carry on like every other day. They wouldn't lack for anything since they weren't dependent on anything outside of what they could make themselves or gather themselves. Yet we have been told they're primitive. Prime. And we are advanced, supposedly. We are civilized. We are totally dependent on a system. The word now is interdependent. And they want us right down into more interdependency, right down to the personal level, not just national levels or regional levels, but personal levels, till we cannot survive in any area outside of their system. That will come down to your garden and what you grow to eat. That will be antisocial in the very near future. We've watched them take over and create the artificial system to warm your houses, and oil and electricity and the con games have pulled there. And I watched this growing up in the UK, where we started off with coal that was traditional, since most of the population were down the mines before I was born, to keep the big industries going. It was, everything was fueled by coal, and even the ships were fueled by coal for the war machines, the battleships, when Britain ruled the world. And so coal was plentiful, although it was still expensive for the guy who dug it from the under the ground, the miner. And then the governments came in and says, we're going to make it more improved. We're going to put in coke, which is like sucked out coal. They suck all the stuff out of it and give you this dried out cinder back. And all the fireplaces throughout Britain had to be remade by the taxpayer, and sometimes you'd cash, put in cash as well on a personal level, to have these special fireplaces inserted to burn the coke, which burned differently from coal. And how much cheaper it was going to be? Well, and it came, and it was about 1.5 times more expensive per ton. And you went through more of it because it did give off a nice glow, mind you, but didn't give any flames off. And you need a special huge thing, like a massive hairdryer made out of steel, but sat in a stand to get the thing going. This was the new improved one. And then after about 5 years of this farce, and big companies that are all Masonic companies, that's how governments give out their contracts. You see, it's big Masonic contractors who get these big jobs, right down to your local level for putting the tarmac on the road. It's all Masons. Big companies came along and said, well, we can make it even better. We can give you gas. You know, no, before that was electricity. Electricity was going to be so cheap with all the nuclear plants. And then, sure enough, everybody said, well, gee, yeah, they've given us these prices. It's going to be cheaper. So everybody converted to electric heating. And we're told to get off-peak electric heating. So you had these big things in your living rooms, about 6 feet long, these big boxes, tin boxes filled with water or oil, and they had bricks in them to maintain and hold heat. So it would heat up during the night, and hopefully it would give off a little bit of warmth all through the day. That was your off-peak, until that doubled in price after about 3 or 4 or 5 years after it was installed. Then we went to the next move, which was going to be natural gas. So once again, everything's stripped out once again, nationwide. This is almost every house on government decisions. And in came the natural gas, and boom, up went the prices again once it was in. We always seem to fall for the same line. We believe these guys, and we get you-know-what every time. And now the same farce has been going on through North America. We watch the same farce here, what's going to be the next fuel, what's better and better. But the fact is, they've got us all off wood, almost, and coal, which is plentiful in the coal-bearing areas, until we're on their system of oil, gas, and they're trying to pass laws so you can't burn wood fires anymore, because your little wood fire is polluting the earth. However, what's amazing is that there's a lack of consistency in their arguments, because when the governments changed the laws for the forestry departments, who used to put out fires in forests, 2 or 3 years ago, the new law is for them to set fires, which are good, apparently. When they set fires and have whole forests blazing, which is supposed to be undergrowth, it always gets out of hand. And we see that through British Columbia and different places. But that's the new policy. Overnight, they changed the law. You don't stop fires, you start fires if you work for the Ministry of Forestry. So you see these thousands of acres going up in smoke, black smoke. But the government, when the government does it, is good smoke. When your little chimney does it to heat yourself, that's bad smoke. And this is what they try to give us as logic. You see, when there's no logic there, there's another reason. Always. 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 They don't want you independent in any area of living whatsoever. Being independent makes you a little bit, well, you don't want to go along with everything all the time. You get used to having a little bit independence in particular areas. And that makes you a problem. They want everyone to be passive and go along and do what you're told and never complain and just plead all the time for whatever you need. Just plead to your local politician or whoever. Plead like good little slaves should do. And as the ancients said in Greece, the higher the civilization which becomes dependent on the system it has created, the easier it is to destroy it, to make it fall. We have seen glimpses of this when we saw the ice storm in Quebec a few years ago, where places and parts of Montreal came to a total standstill, power lines all came down, many people were heated by electricity only, and thousands of generators were donated by the public, and everybody kicked in, and food and everything was sent. And yet only 50 years before that, if that had happened, they'd have been quite able to survive themselves. Because at that time, most of them still burned wood. And could keep themselves afloat and alive through an ice storm. Not anymore. So being interdependent makes you more prone to, when a crisis occurs, you'll be down on your knees pleading for help. A hopeless case. And most folk, when the good times are rolling, don't mind this at all. The conditioned consumer out there. They can just rush back and forth between different shops and buy, buy, buy. Credit cards galore, as though there's no tomorrow. Because they have no memory of not so long ago when you couldn't get a credit card without collateral to back it up. Today they're thrown at you to get everybody enslaved into a system which they have no control over. And also used to just getting whatever they want when they want it. Not so much need it, but when they want it. And if it came to the crunch, they'd be helpless in any natural survival situation.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music.
That's where the elite want you. Cities are at the mercy of the system. And that is why the biggest proponents of the system are those who live in cities. They will stand up for that system as long as that system is taking extra care of them. The history of cities, which are called the beehives according to Plato, where they would create an unnatural system and then use those people within that unnatural system to control the rest of the world has been going on for a long, long time. Ancient Rome didn't just fall with the various Vandals and the Goths and Visigoths and etc., plundering them. There was also a massive uprising by the rural people who were being taxed out of existence to pay for the luxuries of those within Rome and all the publicly funded events, the daily events like bread and circuses to keep them all happy as they went down the tubes in their perversions and deviances. The rural folk had had enough, and that's not the first time that's happened in empires and histories. Today, the cities and the city-states release a new form of city-state we have. A few years ago, the United Nations declared the creation of super-cities, these massive amalgamated cities which would be the new city-states. And sure enough, in the provinces, which are just states in Canada, were taxed mainly to pay for all those who live in the cities and all the things they need in the cities and all their infrastructure and all their massive sewer systems and water supplies and filtrations that they have to keep updating all the time. They can't pay for it themselves because they're paying so much money in taxes in cities already for all the other things they really don't need, like new government buildings and etc. and statues and events. So they have to tax all the rural people to pay for it all. In the last week or two, there have been articles in the newspapers in Canada, which is staged. Again, the articles are staged at the right time and spoken by the right people, but they're about the new poverty in the rural areas because of the high cost of living and taxations. And also over the many years, they've been closing down little hospitals from the 1980s onwards. All the small hospitals that used to service rural areas have been closed quietly down. In Canada, Bob Rae was in Ontario when he started doing it. He kicked off the ball to start that for Ontario, this great hero of the working poor, who's now running for the Liberal candidate, for the head of that. But he would wear any stripe he was told to. They want everyone into the cities because the cities are the new habitat areas, the new up-and-coming slums for everyone to be crammed into for this beautiful new world order. You're observed, controlled, and so on. It's very much like Hong Kong, parts of Hong Kong. They had high rises and they had all these shacks built on top for the poor were living on the top. And they're always being burned out because of the shanty towns that they had on top of these big high rises, squeezed together like sardines. China has put up massive cities for industries to be populated by the rising middle classes in the management system. And the rural areas there are being squeezed like crazy too and put under. Same old story always. They say that one thing that we do, which makes us different from other creatures, is that we use tools. Now, some other creatures do use tools as well. However, we certainly need them to survive on the planet. Yet, progress has been defined now not so much that we use tools, but we must adapt to the tools themselves, the tools that we make, the creation that we make, the creature or creation we make, must now dominate us, and we must adapt to it. That's an interesting twist on it. And who says we must? Why must we? Well, we must because the elite have planned it that way. Because we will become more efficient tools, the tools for them. That's why we must adapt to the other tools. We are tools. We will become perfect tools to be used, as we always have been. That's our function, according to the elite. Those who have no minds of their own and no awareness of reality of their own are simply there to be used by those who understand. That's part of their system. Always has been. It's very much like General Albert Pike when he mentioned that it was not necessary that the lower orders of Masons understand the signs and symbols they would see during their rituals, their low-down degrees. It was only necessary that they think they understood the meanings of them. But we are being asked now, not asked, we are being told we're going to, and gradually coerced until we think it's all natural, that implants in our bodies are simply a natural part of this evolution, this great religion of evolution, which is an exoteric for the public and an esoteric for the elite. Really based on Hinduism, where we come out the slime and just evolve bit by some unified intelligence. Well, it's funny that other ones have evolved along with them but haven't the intelligence, isn't it? The reason that awareness is not present so much today is through massive, massive scientific indoctrination and massive propaganda. The television has been the greatest tool. We have the Ra, Dio, you know, the god of Ra, you know. And Tel, Levi, Zion. Great tools. The trick of the elect, electric. Which has worked wonders on the minds of Joe Blow. There are some excellent books out there and studies that have been done, mainly in the 60s and 70s, on the effects of television on youngsters. Psychologists were observing this very closely to see the zombie look on the children as their mouth drops open and they stare at this thing for ages and emulate what they see without thinking about it. All these studies were done and many books were published at the time. Now they don't put so much out because that part was really a learning experience and observing experience for the elite themselves. That's why these studies were done, to see if they were working well and how they could even further the techniques of indoctrinations. A tremendous tool, tremendous power when television became the babysitter and you become the passive observer being downloaded. Tremendous sciences that were well understood before they were presented to the public. In Britain, in the 50s, when many people couldn't afford televisions, the late 50s, they started dumping on the market, bringing shiploads in from the United States, and which were reconditioned and going cheap because they wanted a TV in every home, just like a computer in every home today. Never for our benefit, but for their benefit. And the company that was putting them out across the country was called DER. DER, which is red backwards, of course, for the revolutionary part. And sure enough, we started getting the first reruns of older American TV shows. Law and Order type things, courtroom dramas, Perry Mason. The Lawyer series. Mm-hmm. And in hospitals, which would then indoctrinate us that injections were good and put yourself in their hands because they know what they're doing, and you can't question medicine. It's an ongoing perfect science, and they could direct our lives for us. It's all part of the propaganda. Law, courtroom dramas, and hospital dramas. That's how we're indoctrinated. Add in a little human interest thing that sucks us into the story, and we forget we're being downloaded with propaganda. And as this particular time progresses that we're living in, the speeding up process towards their goal, which is a window of opportunity, as Mr. Rockefeller said himself. A window, remember, can close. And so they must always stay on their target time, their dates. Or they start to lose control. Everything is coordinated, the public opinion, the indoctrination of the public, are the polls showing we're all on board for this? Are we on track for that? And that's the technique that's been used on us. Always. But everything meshes so perfectly together that if one thing's out at any particular time, that window can slam shut. And so you see the need for them. You can see that it's not a panic, but it's definitely the big iron, the velvet glove is off the fist. And that's what we're seeing today. With the police forces, militaries, all getting ready to control public crowds, mobs, in case there's some kind of riot because of whatever, who knows what they've got planned. But that's all part of this process. Everything must come off on the dates that they have ready for them coming off, or they might start losing control. And all the speeches that will be given to the public for every possible scenario, which will be given over radio and television, have already been written for every possible scenario. Most won't ever be used, but they've covered every base, because every move on the chessboard is planned before we even see the chessboard. That's how power keeps control of itself and keeps a hold over you. We must always be aware of this system and how perfected it is. Thousands of think tanks are employed on a daily, ongoing, full-time, yearly basis, going over everything that could go wrong with this agenda, this plan, and ways to counteract it. All possible scenarios, like a battle that's never taken place yet, are gone over. All reactions are gone over to make sure they never lose control. And that's not a big deal when you control all the money. Money's nothing. They make it out of thin air. It's not hard to do when you control the whole system and you have everyone's energy taken from them and put into a thing called money. Now, on a brighter note, to end this particular little spontaneous talk, which didn't quite go into spontaneous combustion, the weather has been amazing for the last week or so. The snow vanished after about a week of rain. There was fog every day, and I hear it's the same in Sweden right now, so I guess the northern hemisphere is getting the same weather pretty well. And I'm sure if they give us a real whack of cold to follow, the media can go into action with its what's happening to the weather conversation type thing that they get into. They started that big time last year to get us all thinking about the effects of global warming. But they'll never mention the constant aerial spraying that's going on every single day and night, and which anyone who wants to can look up and see. It never ceases. But at least the weather has given some of us a chance to get more wood in. And the ground has frozen sufficiently after all the rain to at least keep it kind of firm. tomorrow night, I think I'll talk a little bit about Christmas, a little bit about the mystery religion behind it, and also some of the truths contained within the mystery religion, because there are always truths in everything, as well as many lies. So for me, it's good night, and may your God and sunny days maybe go with you.
When this old world starts getting me down, and people are just too much for me to face, I climb way up to the top of the stairs, and all my cares just drift right into space. On the roof, it's peaceful as can be, and there the world below can't bother me. Let me tell you now, when I come home feeling tired and weak, I go up where the air is fresh and sweet.
On the roof,
I get away from the hustling crowd and all that rat race noise down in the street.
On the roof,
on the roof, the only place I know where you can find two wish to make it so. Dab in the middle of town, I found a paradise that's trouble-proof. And if this world starts getting you down, there's room enough for two up on the roof.